In the face of natural disaster or personal disaster in nature, the people you call for help are highly trained, highly experienced, but most of the time, totally unpaid. 90% of firefighters and the emergency services workforce is made up of volunteers. And the stakes are high for these people on the front lines. Just this month, two marine rescue volunteers died during a rescue operation in northern New South Wales. It's one thing to sign up for a volunteering group to make friends and learn new skills, but what drives people to put their own lives on the line to save others, all while juggling their own day jobs and families? This week is National Volunteer Week, which raises some bigger questions. How sustainable is a system that relies so heavily on unpaid frontline volunteers, and should they be paid for the work they do? If you are a volunteer on the front lines of your community, SES, Fire Brigade, Surf Life Saving Club, I would love to know why you do it, why you keep going out there. Lachlan Gales has been a volunteer firefighter with the Country Firefighting Authority in Victoria for 40 years. He's risen through the ranks to the level of CFA Group Officer of the Wangaratta Group. Lachie, welcome to Life Matters.
Good morning, Keegan. I'm happy to be here.
I'm happy you're with me. Take me back to 1986, the year you signed up. What prompted you to put your name on that list?
Well, Keegan, I'd moved into a rural community with my then partner and now wife, happily, and into her family was deeply connected in that community and to the local fire brigade. And I thought in the first instance it would be a great way to get to know the people in the community. But I also, from my own family background, volunteering was always something in our lives. It was always something my family had done in a lot of different ways.
What kind of volunteering culture did your family have? Like, what were you looking at in your dad's, your grandfather's, uncles?
Well, growing up I was at primary school age in the 60s, and I was surrounded by people that had been away to war in World War II. Grandfathers had participated in World War I. They were a big presence in our life and were very aware that they were volunteers. They put their hands up to go. It was the Australian way of doing things. It was the right thing to do. My family, with mum and dad directly, they were involved in all sorts of pursuits around, whether it's service clubs, or they were heavily involved in creating opportunities for intellectually disabled people in our community. So we're always surrounded by people that were doing things because they were motivated to go beyond their day-to-day, to do more than just their daily job.
Lachie, I'm thinking about Victoria and fire and the last 40 years and just how ferocious some of those fires have been, and it's getting worse. How has the volunteer fire workforce adapted over this time?
Well, we have adapted. I'm of the generation that has been involved in all the major incidents of this century since 2003, when we started what we broadly call the campaign fires, which happen with increasing rapidity. They've been a major thing since that date. Our systems are much better. Our equipment is much better. None of those are perfect by any street, but I've witnessed how we've become better at managing those incidents, how the equipment we've got, the vehicles, the tankers are safer. They're a better thing to put forward in these incidents. And that's been terrific. It's also been an opportunity for people like me to stand up and help make a difference and help change the way we work and make sure that the volunteer influence stays strong in our organisations, so that the people that are on the fire ground, their experience and their needs are reflected in our systems.
You're listening to Life Matters here on ABC Radio National. I'm Tegan Taylor talking with Lachlan Gales, a 40-year veteran of the Country Fire Authority in Victoria. I'd love to hear from you if you're a volunteer on the front lines of your community or if you want to shout out a volunteer. One person has texted saying, "I'm a firefighter, haven't seen many fires, thank goodness, but the one I remember most is the Bermagui fires a couple of years ago. We did a few shifts overnight after the worst of it. It's still intense. Fires were still all around us, but the energy had largely gone out of them. You're fighting your tiredness, trying to stay alert, still do what you need to do, and yet it's really worthwhile." Doug has also called in. Doug, you think volunteers' families deserve more support. What do you want to see happen?
Well, I'm a Lismore area resident, and yeah, we saw the huge floods in 22. And honestly, if the volunteers that actually used their tinnies had not picked those people up from the flood waters, we would have had a lot more people die in those floods. But the thing is that no matter what the volunteer, I really think that there needs to be a national compensation scheme for volunteers, that anyone who's volunteering, even just for people volunteering for things like the book shows and things like that. Everyone needs a national compensation scheme that actually protects them as being volunteers just in case the worst happens, because their family still needs support and, there's still mortgages to be paid and things like that. And we really need to compensate these people for the effort that they put into.
Doug, thank you so much for the call. A fantastic point. Here with me also is Mark Pierce, who is the CEO of Volunteering Australia. Mark, what do you say to Doug's suggestion there, a national compensation scheme for volunteers?
Tegan, good morning. Doug strikes upon a really important point here, and that is we have a reasonable expectation that as individuals and citizens within this country, we can participate in the life of community. And sometimes that's book fairs and sometimes it's emergency services, and more often than not, it's everything in between. The idea around protecting volunteers, protecting volunteer families, and protecting the rights and I suppose elevating the responsibility of organisations which rely upon volunteers is critically important. It can take lots of different forms, and in many ways it already does. You think about some of those formalised structures. I'm a member of the SES in Queensland. There's insurance which sits around the activities that I undertake as an SES volunteer. But I think one of the things that we often miss, and the National Strategy for Volunteering speaks to this profoundly, is to understand the volunteer experience, but then ensure that there is appropriate protection, training, and ongoing support for volunteers, and that extends to their families as well.
Mark, how critical is this when we've got a declining volunteering rate? We know that volunteer rates have been declining in recent years and more severe natural disasters. How do we reckon with those two things kind of going in opposite directions?
Yes, and this is where I suppose the rubber hits the road, to utilise that terminology. Interestingly, the latest general social survey data, which came out a couple of weeks ago and speaks to that period between 2020 and 2025, shows that volunteer rates, that is the number of volunteers, hasn't actually declined. But what we are seeing is that that volunteers are spending more time volunteering their time. And that's great, but obviously that can't go on forever. You need appropriate supports. That issue around greater community need and the greater demand upon volunteer time and resources is one of those things that we, I suppose, everyone grapples with. The volunteer grapples with, organisations grapple with it, and to a large extent, governments at all levels grapple with that. That is perhaps probably the most important point of focus at present, to ensure that the volunteer experience meets the expectations of volunteers and that there is appropriate support for volunteering itself, but for the volunteers themselves also.
Ashley has texted in. Ashley says some of these volunteers should be paid for training courses and weekly training in the same manner as the Army Reserve. Turning out when called for can then be measured as a component of efficiency, which would affect the pay given. Lockie, what do you think of an approach like that?
Well, actually, I'll just take you back to your remark at the start around how sustainable are volunteer firefighting services. There's something like 180,000 volunteer firefighters around the country. That's three times the size of the ADF. So we certainly don't have a choice. We have to make it sustainable. We just have to make sure that this kind of service continues. Now, to do that, I think we do have to adapt. We have to adapt to a new century and how we go about things. But we can't throw the baby out with the bathwater. Volunteerism as an ethic, as a value in Australian life, we really need to hang on to that. That pervades a lot of things that make Australia the great place it is. So we have to be, I think, adaptable. We need to think about how can we support volunteers without necessarily crossing the bridge where they are paid to do a role. And I think things like the Army Reserve model, that sets an example where employers are supported when their employees step up to do their military service. So I think there's conversations that can be had. We certainly know amongst the volunteer community and in CFA that it's harder now to get people released from their workplace than it has been in the past. So that affects our capacity. If we could create pathways where it was easier for employers, I'm an employer myself, I understand the difficulties in releasing people from, particularly from small businesses. If we can find pathways to support employers, perhaps employers could be paid while their employees train, for instance. Not necessarily impact on the response, but training is a big part of the challenge for volunteers, particularly in emergency services, and making it easier for employees to undertake these courses, which are increasingly complex and demanding of time. If we can find ways to do that, that'd be a positive thing.
You're listening to Life Matters here on ABC Radio National. I'm Tegan Taylor with Lachlan Gales, who's been with the Country Fire Authority in Victoria for 40 years, and Mark Pearce, CEO of Volunteering Australia, talking about how we can maintain and keep sustainable our volunteer workforce, especially when it comes to emergency services. Eliza Dreeves is the club captain at the Metropolitan Caloundra Surf Lifesaving Club in Queensland. Eliza, how long have you been volunteering for the surf club?
And I've been volunteering at MET since 2008 as a patrolling member since I was 13.
And you actually did your first rescue at 16. That is really young. Like, what do you remember from that?
It was a fairly memorable part of my life. It was a mass rescue that we had at our beach, some really big surf conditions, and several people swept out, and we took some boards out and kept them calm, and then ferried them back in our IRBs, our inflatable rescue boats. So, yeah, it was a pretty big core memory of my childhood.
So now you're club captain. How many hours a week, what does that look like for you in terms of commitment?
Probably behind the scenes, the commitment is upwards of 20 hours a week, maybe. And putting in emails and planning meetings and rostering and checking in on equipment, plus, some weekend work as well there.
What, that's a lot. What is it that keeps you coming back to it?
I think if you ask anyone in life saving, it's a real family that we're part of, as I'm sure some of your other guests have mentioned this morning. But the camaraderie we have as an organisation is really strong, and we're always there for each other as well as the people we're looking after on our beaches. But yeah, we get skills, and I love giving back to the community as well, so it keeps me coming back year on year.
On that, Liz has texted in saying, when I retired age 72, I found I missed structure, social connection and intellectual stimulation. Volunteering for three different organisations has ticked all these boxes. Drinking coffee, meeting friends and visiting art galleries was fun. What I missed was meaningful connections. Volunteering does this for me. So, Mark, on one hand, we've got this really gratifying emotional connection from being part of a volunteer, but there's also the hours that Eliza's talking about there and Lockie as well. How much of an issue is burnout for emergency service volunteers?
It's a huge issue. It's a huge issue. And I think we see, certainly both anecdotally and through the data, that where community demand increases, where the need within community increases, people naturally just step up and fill that gap. Again, the latest data shows us, yes, there are the same number of volunteers volunteering, but they contributed last year 128 million more hours than they did previously. So it tells you that the same number of people are doing the volunteering, but they're having to spend more of their time in volunteer roles. And for many people, that's fine. They're happy to do it. But it's critically important that we understand the issues around burnout, around the toll that takes on people to be engaged, not just in any part of volunteering or community broadly, but when it comes to emergency services, there is oftentimes trauma associated with it. There is a far greater responsibility that comes along with those sorts of roles. And awareness around that in the first instance is really important. But then thereafter, and I keep coming back to this point, is appropriate supports and support mechanisms which provide for the volunteer themselves and, of course, the volunteer's family and friends as they move through that critical point of community support.
Lockie, how do you manage this for yourself?
Well, I think one of the key things for me, and it's been mentioned here already, is around the people that are within your organisation. One thing that defines CFA for me is the care that people have for each other. So the primary, defence in these things is the fact that the people around you, the people that know the experience you've been having, know the scene you've just come from, the fire you just attended, or the MVA, the motor vehicle accident. But beyond that, the organisation itself is very proactive in providing resources, providing avenues for people. We have a great peer support team. I think my advice to people around me as a senior volunteer in my community is to make use of these things. I think too often one element of the Australian character is definitely how readily we volunteer, but it's also that we can be pretty stoic, and sometimes that's to our detriment, and we need to actually reach out. And I'm pleased to say that within CFA, there is a lot of support for reaching out when you need it.
Mark, what other supports could we formalise so that volunteers all over Australia are as well supported as it sounds like Lockie's been able to be?
I think, as I mentioned previously, National Strategy for Volunteering provides a series of prescriptions to ensure that there are appropriate supports for volunteers of all types, but certainly for emergency services volunteers. Lockie mentioned within services such as CFA or SES, there's a lot of support structures for individuals, for members to be able to go to and just chat about their experience as a volunteer in those services. I think the other thing that we can do is, and it's excellent post the event, the supports are excellent post the event, there is an opportunity to, I suppose, increase the support and awareness for volunteers prior to events occurring. And that provides a good level of awareness and, I suppose, infrastructure mentally, emotionally, for some of the things that you can come across. The other piece, of course, and a couple of callers have mentioned this, is that there's an opportunity for government to look more closely at things like the tax and transfer system. How do we incentivize that engagement with volunteering, perhaps with organisations being compensated for the time volunteers spend? But awareness is critically important. Awareness is that piece around which all of these supports coalesce and come from, and that's a responsibility for us as volunteers. It's a responsibility for the organisations for whom we volunteer, and it's a responsibility for the Commonwealth, state and territory and local governments to take on wholeheartedly and ensure that the volunteer experience at the time of engagement and afterwards is as good as it can be.
Mark, Lockie, thank you both so much for sharing your insights today. Go well. Mark Pearce, CEO of Volunteering Australia. Lachlan Gales, a 40-year veteran of the Country Fire Authority in Victoria. He's the CFA Group Officer for the Wangaratta Group and a member of the Wangaratta North Fire Brigade.
Think bigger about the world we live in. Ask your smart speaker to play ABC RN.